It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right. It is Money for Lunch. And I'm glad you're here. Hey, it's wrapping up a weekend in San Diego. I just had a lot of fun doing a film shoot out here. And always fun to be in San Diego. A lot of great stuff to see in San Diego. The weather was fantastic. And this is one of the things that we do here at Money for Lunch is we go to locations and we will, do a featurette, for lack of better terms, on a specific business. And if you want to know more about that, you can hit me up at bert@bertmartinez.com. And you can see some of our featurettes, if you will, some of the things that we've done at my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/BertJMartinez. And if you go to youtube.com/BertJMartinez, or just go to YouTube and put in Bert Martinez, then subscribe to the channel, I will send you some free stuff. I will pay for the shipping. I will make it extremely fun and valuable for you. And on top of that, you will also be automatically added to our awesome Amazon giveaway. Good golly, Mrs. Molly. The Amazon giveaway is, we're talking Kindles. We're talking Amazon Prime giveaways. We're talking stuff that will help your business, your life, and your career. What more can I say? Your business, life, or career, that's what I'm talking about. Let's make it happen. Go to youtube.com/BertJMartinez. Subscribe to the channel. It's free. You know it's free. Hit the red button, and you're off and running. Yeah, you're off and running. So anyway, good stuff there. Glad that you're subscribing today, and really would appreciate it. Totally would appreciate it. Yeah, man. Just do it. Do it, do it, do it. All right. Other things that I appreciate. Well, I appreciate my first guest today, Peggy Caruso. Peggy Caruso is the owner of Life Coaching and Beyond. She's certified executive and personal development coach, advanced relaxation therapist, NLP master practitioner and author, and 8-time entrepreneur with 24 years experience. Her revolutionized series has been approved as a trademark, and her latest book is Revolutionize Your Corporate Life. Peggy Caruso, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet, you bet. Well, let's talk about this, balancing work life. I want to get your opinion on this. I think that this whole thing about balancing work life is become kind of a stressor for most people. I don't know how the only way I've been able to balance my work life is to integrate my work life. I mean, I have my kids that sometimes work for me. And if I'm doing a speaking engagement, I try to bring my family with me and we share sometimes some family time before I speak and after I speak, or the day before and the day after. So we make a little mini vacation out of it. But I think that, I'm kind of hyper-focused. I'm either doing, business 24/7 or I'm doing family 24/7. I don't know if I have much balance. I don't know if you can achieve balance. Are we asking too much? Give me your thoughts on this.
You absolutely can achieve balance. I have a lot of corporate, especially it seems to be more difficult with men that come in and they're very, very focused in their business, but when they get home, they don't know how to turn it off and leave work at work and home at home. And I give them many, many, many tips. Because if you don't have work balance, you go right into time and stress, which causes another problem.
Okay, say that again. If you don't have work balance, you go into what? Time stress?
You go into, you know, time and stress issues. So you have to find a balance. A very good way to start work-life balance is to get yourself calm before you even start your day. That's something that I found is a secret since I built my facility, because I do executive and personal coaching and retreats, but I also do relaxation therapy. And to get everybody in a calm mindset and a positive energy flow at the beginning of the day is very, very beneficial.
Sure. And you know what? And I think you're right in the sense that you have to plan for it. I'm not a big proponent of, checking my email after work. Hey, if I'm done with work, I'm done. Like I said, I'm either in, I'm either all the way in or all the way out, depending on the situation. But I think, this idea, that I'm going to work 8 hours for my business and then shut down and go work 8 hours for my, spend 8 hours with my family. I don't know if that, I just don't know if that works as easily as sometimes people make it sound to be, right? Because to me, it's like, sometimes, for example, hey, I might be, perfect example. Next week, I have a mastermind here in Phoenix. During that week of my mastermind, man, I'm going to be putting in some overtime. My family in advance knows that. Now, because I've done this a few times, and because to avoid contention, I plan this out with my family in advance. This is when I'll be available this week, and this is when I won't be available, and this is what's going on. So, everybody can plan on me accordingly, and they know that because this is an exceptional week, with this mastermind in town, I'm going to be kind of working a lot heavier than I normally would. And just like if we're doing a family vacation, I plan ahead for that. And I tell my people at work, hey, I'm going to be gone. Don't try to reach me, period. And so I think that for me anyway, that's just easier. I get either, balance, I think, is harder than just turning it off and turning it on. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense, and you've got it down, so you should be an executive coach. an example is exactly kind of similar to what you had said is after work socialization. That's a perfect example of how corporate people get caught up in having to go to functions after work, but you can always minimize them or take your stay-at-home spouse if you have one, and it kind of incorporates the two. So you seem to have that balance that a lot of people can't find. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you. And again, I just don't know, I think that people, when they hear the word balance, I think that the thing that freaked me out at first is that it seems like it's something that's supposed to happen, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost easier than they make it sound. Like a lot of things, it's probably simple, but not necessarily easy to install. But certainly worthwhile, because after all, we've all seen people who are workaholics, and they are sometimes on their second or third or fourth marriage. They're estranged from their family. Their health is in jeopardy. That's certainly not balance of any kind.
I totally agree with that. And it, people have to remember that it takes less than a minute a day to put forth effort for a successful relationship. So before you leave to your hectic day, it's really nice to start out giving your family some sort of compliment or say something nice or plan something nice. So it's very easy if people can just get in that habit.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I like the key word there is habit, you really have to get into the habit. And especially today, with all that we have available to us, it's easier, I think, than ever before to really schedule that into your schedule. And I know that for some people that sounds kind of off-putting, but you know what? We have all forgotten important dates. We have forgotten, to show up for court. Or people have forgotten birthdays, anniversaries. On one occasion, I forgot my own birthday. And so I much rather put it in my schedule to help me remember, because ultimately it's much better for me to remember and look like I know that what I'm doing than not to remember and verify to everybody that I have no idea what I'm doing.
Sure. And with technology, it's easy to set appointments with yourself. I always tell people that,
right.
You know, in the corporate world, we're used to setting appointments for meetings and whatnot. So set appointments for your personal life as well. Very beneficial.
Yes. Yes. All right. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about, I think this is something that's most important. And that is, how to identify, saboteurs or sabotaging habits that limit us from reaching our desired result or outcome or goal. Talk about this.
Sure. There are many obstacles that limit us from reaching our goals. Obstacles are stressful, and that stress is a reaction to the demands of life. So we all have habits that we fell into. A lot of them are from childhood, and to change a habit, because they do create obstacles in the corporate world, you have to figure out how to identify what they are. And the very first way that you would start with that is some self-reflection, because you have to discover what negative role you play. So that would be, the very first thing you would be able to do to identify it. You would also, there are things like understanding the pros and cons of a workplace and discovering things like countenance and body language. I had a client who was in a managerial position, very, very nice person, but had given off the wrong body language to people that worked for him. And they thought he was mean and stuck up and, didn't think he was a good manager. And when they did a test, it come back that, to show that he wasn't. So, when he came to me for coaching, it was very evident just watching him and studying his behavioral patterns that he just needed to change his countenance and his body language. It was very easy.
Interesting. Yeah, you know what? And it's funny you should say that, because some of the times these nuances really have a massive impact on us, and we don't even know that we're doing it. So something that you said that kind of caught my attention was how did you phrase it? The negative
understanding. Did you say the when I was talking about the pros and cons of the workplace?
Yeah, that you have to have the understanding of whatever, something like the negative idea that you bring to the table. In other words, some of the responsibility falls on our shoulders, is what you were saying. And I don't know exactly how you phrased it, but I like this, because a lot of us fall into the blame game, right? Well, you know what? That project would have been successful if it wouldn't have been for, so-and-so. And I'm a big believer that, hey, if you're either responsible and in charge or you're not. And you can decide what you want to do, but it doesn't go both ways. You can't be the leader and then not take responsibility because you failed to train incorrectly or set the right expectations.
I totally agree with that.
All right, so what are some of the things that we can do to prepare or maybe overcome some of these limiting habits that we create?
Well, again, once you self-reflect and you identify what they are, you must learn how to turn all your negatives into positives. You can take your cons that you have for workplace habits and turn them into pros. Like, I'll give you an example. One mm-hmm. of the cons of a workplace habit is figuring out your non-productive actions. Once you figure out what those time wasters are, I mean, it's huge in turning your day around, and then you've made it a pro just by figuring out how you can eliminate those time wasters.
Yeah, I think that to me is a great example. I mean, we all waste time. That's just the reality. And some people waste more time than others. But look, if you don't think you're wasting time, one of the things that really woke me up to the fact how much time I was wasting is just do the old-fashioned track what you do for, you know, for 20 minutes at a time. And you'd be surprised how much time we spend doing nothing. And you know, hours every day are sometimes spent doing nothing. We're busy, but we're certainly not productive.
Exactly. And that's why I make a lot of people do a lot of journaling to discover what their time wasters are. They also come in, you know, when we were just previously talking about self-reflection and trying to identify them, a lot of people will come in and say, geez, Peggy, I have difficulty concentrating. I seem kind of like I'm a little bit depressed. I'm tired. I'm irritable, difficulty sleeping. Well, to me right there, that those are all stress symptoms. So you would do time and stress things to assist in that.
Gotcha. I like that. Yeah, I like that. You know what? So again, what I like of this idea about journaling is it is not based on intelligence. It's not based on income. It's not based on technology. It's something that everybody has access to and can do.
Sure, and it's very easy. And, you know, a lot of people will say, I don't want to journal. You know, they feel it's like writing a diary, but it's not. It's journaling is so effective on a personal and a professional level, you know, because once you journal, you can go back and you can see things that sometimes you can't see because you're not keeping track of them, if that makes any sense. So journaling right. is very effective to figure out what your habits are that you need change, what are your time wasters, all those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Man, I love that. Yeah. And again, look, this is the other way of looking at it. If you're the kind of person that says, I don't want to journal because it's boring, it's hard, you know, or maybe I'm scared of the results are going to be, then maybe it's not that important to you. Because to me, it's no different than somebody who, you know, doesn't want to go to the gym. You know, not everybody loves going to the gym, but you should go because the results that you want. You know, not everybody wants to, you know, I come across clients all the time who are opposed to spending money on marketing and advertising. Well, yeah, we don't really want to spend money there, but we have to because of the results we want. So if you want to improve how you're spending your time, you have to just be disciplined enough to invest some time in journaling. And that way you can discover where you're wasting time. And otherwise, you're really not committed to the result.
Sure. And think about journaling. It helps you track your progress. So it was key when you just said about going to the gym. Exercise is physical exercise that you go and then you track your progress by how you appear and how it has the health benefits. When you meditate, you track your progress on like how you begin with a guided meditation and then you can get up to the point where you can sit in total silence. It's the same with journaling. You can track the progress that you make with changing your habits.
Yeah. I like that so very much. Yeah, I just think that's, again, to me, and I know a lot of people are listening and they're wondering how beneficial is this, and it's super beneficial, ladies and gentlemen. This is something that, again, does not take an enormous amount of time. It doesn't take money. It doesn't take aptitude. It's just sitting there and reflecting on what you're doing. And again, with technology, you can probably do this on your phone or your tablet very, very easily. Let's talk about this. Because you mentioned something about turning negatives into positive. What are some key exercises to do that?
Well, there's, of course, because I am a relaxation therapist as well, there's many relaxation techniques. You know, it's not just about meditation, but it's about you could do Tai Chi, you could do yoga. I have a zero gravity sensory deprivation floating pool, if you're familiar with them. That is an awesome
yeah.
way to relax and to have many health benefits as well. So when you have that time and you learn those relaxation techniques, you can think more clear. You can do self-talk. I'm sure you've heard of like auto-suggestion and positive affirmations.
Yes.
those are very important. It's how you're training your mind, just like when you were talking about physical exercise and we were talking about journaling. That's a way to, you know, train your mind. So, and the other thing is, I also coach a lot of children, teach them success principles and whatnot. And they stay, children and teens and millennials, they seem to be, stay focused longer on the negative. So make a list of your negatives and then make a complete opposite list of all the positives. And then take the negative list away and focus on the positive. It's a very effective tool.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is we are already using this auto-suggestion, these affirmations, whether we believe it or not, because we go around saying things in a negative way. A lot of us use this in a negative way. I'm too fat. I'm always running late. I never seem to have any money. I'm not a very lucky person. Things of these kind of affirmations that are affirmed, or these auto-suggestions that are repeated over and over and over again, become reality. And so it's true that it works the opposite when you start to be aware of them, and you can start saying to yourself, you know what, I love being on time, or, you know, I plan my day out, so I always arrive 15 minutes early. And that one quick, change starts making you more aware of your time management, and you start arriving earlier more often until the point that it's a habit.
You are so right. I mean, fake it till you make it. And we've heard that phrase over and over.
Yes.
So, yes, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, Peggy, we're out of time, but I would love to bring you back and talk more about, business and life and career and get something. And we didn't get a chance to talk about some of these other things, such as competitiveness. I'd love to bring you back and talk more.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
You bet. It's good to have you here, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you.
All righty. Good stuff there from Peggy Caruso. Life Coaching and Beyond is where you can find her at. And I forgot to ask her website, but I'm sure if you go to Peggy Caruso, you go to Google and type in Peggy Caruso or Life Coaching and Beyond, you'll get a hold of her. And I just love her take on life, right? Good stuff there. All right. Our next guest, Sam Waterfall. Sam Waterfall has become a regular contributor here, and he's has a tremendous insight as to being obvious, right? His whole brand is, you know, obvious marketing, and now he is disrupting the the HR world with obvious candidate. Sam Waterfall is the founder and career coach at Obvious Candidate, the specialist personal branding consultancy that helps job seekers and promotion hunters position themselves as the obvious candidate for the job they want. Sam is a best-selling author of The 7 Essential CV Upgrades, and his new book, Obvious Candidate, How to Land the Job You Want Faster Than You Ever Thought Possible, is launching or has launched. So we'll find out because he hasn't been on in about a month, so it may have already launched. Sam Waterfall, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Britt, how are you doing? It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. And the first thing off the gate, give us an update on the launch, the 7 Essential CV Upgrades. It's Obvious Candidate. Obvious Candidate, How to Land Your Job Faster Than Ever Thought Possible. Last time you were on the show, that was going to be launching soon. Where are we at on that?
Yeah, that's out now, so that's available. You can find out more at obviouscandidate.com. So, the original book was a bestseller on Amazon Kindle. So that's the one we call it a CV in the UK, but it's a resume in your part of the world over in the States. So whether it's CV upgrades or whether it's a resume upgrade, but what we actually discovered, I've been working in this field for 14 years, and we discovered that actually there was just a few things really when you looked at the resumes people were putting out when they're applying for jobs. And they weren't getting any replies. You know, when you send it and it's crickets, it just goes and there's no replies or nothing at all. Sometimes it's a negative reply. Sometimes it's no reply. And we found if you change these 7 things, wow, you can really make the biggest difference. So that's why that book has done so well.
I want to do a little bit deeper dive on that. But you know what is so funny too, when you say about you put out resumes and you get crickets or you get negative replies, sometimes after hearing crickets for so long, a negative reply is like a home run. Oh my gosh, at least they replied.
Someone noticed me. They noticed me,
right?
To ignore me. Yeah, that's but it's bad, right? You know, but that's, and so often, you know, what I find with all of my candidates, no one's got nothing to say. But sometimes the way they've been explaining their story just leaves so much to be desired. They've got great things to talk about, but the way it comes across is just badly put across. And it's almost not their fault because, you know, that's not their specialism. It's not their area of expertise. But it was something that but we talked about it last time I was on. I was explaining how I got into this world of helping people position themselves for the job they want. And it was when we'd had 1,500 of my colleagues laid off from their jobs in just one day. It was a horrible day, but I just stepped in and I just said, look, there's a couple of things here that I would change if I was, because I know this person. I'd say, look, if I was trying to sell you with this resume, we should change these things. We should talk about you this way. And that was where the 7 Essential CV or 7 Essential Resume upgrades came from, because it was time and time again, people weren't doing these things. Do you know what the number one is? The number one is to put a headline on your resume, because most people, you know, sometimes they would put curriculum vitae or they would put resume at the top. Now, you should start with your name, of course, and your contact details. But the very next line should be a headline. You know, you don't have any advertising without a headline. You don't get a newspaper without a headline. And it makes the biggest difference, because I always describe it, but like if you're looking at a cartoon strip, you can imagine two cartoon characters with the speech bubbles above their head. When you go into a job search, when you go into an interview or anything like that, your speech bubble for your cartoon character is full of all the information about you. You know all of your job history, you know what you're good at, you know what you're bad at, but your hiring manager that you're trying to get your message to, they have got an empty speech bubble. They know nothing. They don't know you yet. And if you try to give them too much, try to give them the whole New York Times in one go. They're not going to get
right.
that. Give them the headline. Oh, now I'm interested. And that's the way it works. So you've got to, the way our brains work, we need to get little sort of bite-sized pieces of information first, grab the attention. It's the old ADA marketing message, right? Where we're first off getting that awareness and getting the attention in the first place. You know, then we're building the desire and the interest and the call to action as we go through. And that's exactly what a CV or a resume must do, just in exactly the same way as we have to with any piece of marketing. But people think of it as the story of their life. I must tell you everything I've done, rather than I must give you a little bit that you need to hear. That's the biggest mistake they make.
So the number one thing is to use a headline, and let's talk about this a little bit deeper. So let's say that I want a job in marketing specifically. I'm a pay-per-click expert. So after putting, you know, obviously I'm going to put on there Bert Martinez, you know, pay-per-click expert or whatever my title might be, pay-per-click specialist, and then my headline should come after that. Or should my headline come before my contact information?
Well, really, that is your headline. So if you're going for a job that would be in pay-per-click, if that was your specialist skill, then we should have that as your headline. And that's assuming you're going for that job. What we're always trying to do is a matching of your headline to the job you're applying to. Because think of what's happening. What people don't do, they just send that resume off and they just hope for the best. And that's when the crickets are there or there's nothing coming back. What happens then, and I was just working with someone this week, they were looking at LinkedIn, and LinkedIn's got this fabulous thing now called Easy Apply. Do you know we say it's fabulous. Do you know what the trouble is? It's easy to apply. So everyone's applying to all these jobs. And you know what? He was already going to be candidate number 86. So can you imagine what's happening at the other end? Either there's an ATS, the applicant tracking system, where the computer is checking through for the right keywords. And if you've not got enough of the right keywords, you're out before it even starts. Or, you know, imagine if it was the old school way. Just imagine if you've got somebody who's on the first line of the HR team, they are suddenly, they've been given this job description, they've been told, read through these 87 resumes that have just applied and tell us the top 20. We're going to have a look at those. We'll maybe do a phone screening. Just imagine, you know, how is that person going to make sense of it? So you've got to make sure that that headline, just what you're doing with a headline is you're helping that poor person, or you're helping the computer, the scanner, the applicant tracking system that's going through there to find if you're relevant. Because trust me, some of these things, it's so easy to apply these days with an online jobs board or with LinkedIn. People just say, oh, yeah, I'll try that one. I'll send it off. And it gets cluttered. So you end up in this mess of applications at the far end. Some of them are very talented people, very appropriate. Others, much less so. And you've got to, you know, spare a thought for the people who are receiving all of these. And if you stop making your resume everything you've ever done and make it that targeted, spearheaded approach to giving them the information that they need to see. And the very best way, if it's a pay-per-click job, tell them that you're a pay-per-click expert. And probably, you know, maybe you have a sub-headline on that resume as well that explains what you've just done. What's your biggest success? Don't leave anything for the bottom of the resume. Fire the big guns first. Tell them what you're great at. Tell them how you've just helped someone else achieve a record result with pay-per-click. That's the way to start. Suddenly you've got their attention back at the start of the ADA model.
ADA. So I love this idea. So we have a headline and then a sub-headline. So maybe my headline, pay-per-click expert or pay-per-click specialist, is my headline. My sub-headline could be, whatever, 300% ROI or something,
yeah,
something,
you know,
along those lines.
Yeah, talk about a result you've just achieved. But make it the truth.
Right.
You know, we don't want any lies on a resume because, you know, we've seen so many high-profile cases of where people get caught with this somewhere down the line. You don't need to lie. You know, if you haven't got the evidence, go and get it. You know, go and work on this. And it's amazing how quickly people say sometimes, oh, do you know what, Sam, I don't have the experience to go for that role. Do you know what I say? Go and get the experience. You know, and it's easy if you're a little bit creative. Go and introduce yourself to someone. Go and get some free experience. Go and work for someone for a week for free. Go and do whatever it takes to go and get that experience that you're lacking. These days, of course, there's Udemy. There's all kinds of courses online. Everyone's got a course that they're promoting somewhere on the internet these days, it seems. Go and take a course.
Yes.
Learn what you need to learn. Because you don't, you know, someone said to me the other day, should I go back to university and get another master's degree? No, I said. Do you know how much that costs and how long it takes? And the information will be out of date by the time you've got it. These days you can learn the bit need very, very quickly from an online course, from an expert. Maybe it's free on YouTube, but go and get that experience and then talk about what you know. It's honestly, it's so easy to create truthful subheadlines, headlines, and then you can position yourself as an expert when it comes to these things. Expert is about knowing the bit extra from the people you're trying to help. That's what it really comes down to. If a bit more, you can help someone make the progress they need to make.
Right. And an expert, just, to, you know, this is one of the things that drove me crazy when I was, quote, putting myself out there, is I thought I had to know everything.
Mm.
And, you know, because as an expert, you know, just like the guru model, right? You know everything, you're infallible. And that's not what an expert is. It's okay for you not to know everything because you just mentioned things go out of date. You know,
yeah,
somebody's putting out a new course every day. And so the chances of you being up to date and knowing everything is slim. But do you know enough about the body of work that you can talk to somebody else? Do you know the terms? Do you know the language, the phrases? You know, if you're applying for a pay-per-click expert and somebody uses the term PPC and you go, I don't know what that is, that's not good.
Exactly. Yeah, you've got to get that. You've got to get that expertise. And one of the ways I like to define expert is actually make someone who can make the complicated simple. And, you know, they often say that you don't know it if you can't teach it. And it's about cutting through, you know, sometimes things are very complicated. Sometimes actually they're not so complicated, but people make them out to be complicated. And an expert can cut through all that complexity and actually tell you what you need to do and give you some step-by-step things to go and make a difference. And even from this, listening to this interview, if people can say, do you know what, I don't have a sensible headline that matches me to the job advert that I'm applying to at the top of my resume, well, gosh, there's just something they can go and apply immediately. And that one thing will make the biggest difference. Some people talk about cover letters as well. And there's a real debate, a very raging debate as to whether these days you should use a cover letter or not. The real indicator is, are they asking for one or not? But I still say that it can be a very good thing. And especially if you're trying to explain something. I was working with someone just earlier this week, and he had got multiple open jobs. Now imagine that. He's working on like three or four different projects at the moment, and that can be a real red flag for someone who's trying to make sense of a resume. And that may be your situation. You may have multiple projects on the go. Maybe you've got one main job, but you're doing a couple of other things as well. Sometimes you need to simplify that story, or at least give a cover letter to say, do you know what? It may look as if I'm doing three things at the moment, but actually they're all helping me to be great at what you need me for. And so you make sense of whatever your history might be so that it really helps the person who's, again, making the decision, should this person get an interview, help make their job easy, because their job's tough. And what they would really love is someone to say, do you know what, I'm a great candidate because of this. And although it might look as if I've got these things, you like any sale, you deal with the objections as well. So you make it very clear why they should move forward, and then do an assumptive close as well and say, I'm going to be available for interview at this time, and we can either speak via Skype or I can come and see you. And you assumptively move on to the next round in the interview process. And a cover letter can be great for doing that as well.
I like that. Let me ask you this. When it comes to things like resumes and cover letters or CVs, what's your take on including a photo? Is that frowned upon? Do you think it helps you stand out? What's your take?
Yeah, that's a great question. But I've actually got within the seven essential CV upgrades, the upgrade number seven is what I call the never nevers. And the never nevers are the things that you should never do. And actually, the one you've just picked is a very interesting one. Now, in the UK, where I'm based, we never put that photo on there. Now, the reason for that here is because, and it's, you know, to a certain extent, it's the same everywhere. You get judged, of course, primarily then on that photo. This is the way human nature works, right? When we see someone, we make that opinion about them very, very quickly. And we say, you know, I know someone who's like that, or we make that judgment in a split second. If you take that off, you've got a better chance of being judged on your credentials and your headline,
right,
and all the experience that you've got, without being prejudged on your photo. Now, by the way, here's something for you. I don't know if you've known this or if you've seen it, maybe you can use it yourself. There's a website called photofeeler.com. Photofeeler.com, basically where you can get a feel for your photos. And it's an amazing site because it gives you the chance to upload your picture, one that you might use on a resume, but more likely on your LinkedIn profile. That's what it's really all about. You can upload two or three photos and get other professionals to vote. Does this person look like the job title they say they are all about? Now, you could be an investment banker and you should have a different look than if you were an advertising director, right? There's a different expectation. And this is about branding. You know, but when we're talking about obvious marketing, obvious candidate, the secret to effective marketing, as you and I've talked about before, is always telling the story that your prospect or that your hiring manager wants to hear. And so your photo needs to tell the story, if you're going to use one, that your hiring manager wants to see. And that's what the photo should do. But photofeeler.com, I'm on no commission there. There's no affiliate link, nothing like that. But go and use it. It's brilliant. Because what it will do is it will give you a score. It will put your photo in a percentile, and it will give you a score for your level of influence, your level of perceived capability, and also your perceived likability. So do people
that
like
is
you?
So cool.
They think you can have, it's really helpful because, you know what, we all have our favorite photo of us, but what if that photo of us just bombs out, right? When it's actually judged by others, because you might have to pick the photo you like less, but it could actually really help you. And I promise you, I've had candidates add tens of thousands of dollars to their salary using better photos. It sets them up better. So I would say, in general, leave your photo. This is to answer that question in a very long way, but leave your photo for your LinkedIn profile and let your resume, let the words and the experience do the talking. There is a slight exception that in some countries, the expectation is that you will have a photo. So it does differ country by country.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, but it makes sense. I love this idea, Sam. This is, fantastic way to just double check how people perceive you, right?
Exactly.
This is a fantastic deal. And what you said is so true. We judge people by their looks. That's unfortunate. We're an enlightened society, but we're not quite that enlightened. We still judge people by their looks. And just, you know, we do that with books as well, right? So even though you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, that's just the way we are in society. And to be able to go to photofeeler.com, upload your photo and get this unbiased opinion. This is fantastic. I love this. I'm actually putting this in LinkedIn right now. Thanks to Sam Waterfall for this very helpful tip. And this is just a fantastic way to make sure that people are connecting with you the way you want them to.
Tip, but where they can find seven of my strategies. I've got a free guide that's out at the moment. So instead of even paying for one of my books, anyone who wants to just get a taste on this, who's thinking about a job search, it's actually called my Obvious Candidate Job Search Acceleration Guide. And it's free. And you can download it at free.obviouscandidate.com.
So they can go to free.obviouscandidate.com and download this. What is it?
It's my job search acceleration guide. So in there we look at
job
seven
search acceleration guide.
Yeah, exactly. You can apply these seven strategies just to help you get the job you want faster, and it's free with all the strategies included.
I love that so much, Sam. All right, so listen, we covered I think let's cover one more of your seven upgrades before you go. What is number three?
Do you know what? Can I tell you about number four? Because I want to tell you about the brutal edit. If we're only going to cover one more, I call it the brutal edit because do you know what? Sometimes you've probably done this yourself. You spend so long doing your jobs, you work really hard, you get all that experience, then you want to add it into your resume. And each time we get an extra job, we add a bit more and we add a bit more. And if we're not careful, we've got four or five pages. And you know what? No, we live in a Twitter generation, right? We live in a Twitter world. Yes. And these days we've got attention span like goldfish. And, you know, if we're going to tell our story, not only is it about having that headline to cut through in that first instance, but also we need brevity all the way throughout. And the brutal edit is the way I say, let's just do a serious cull. You know, if you've got something that's more than 20 years back, that's out anyway, okay? Because no one's believing or no one's thinking about stuff. I mean, do you know what? That was almost like, that's when they just invented Hotmail, and AOL. So back then, things have moved on so far. So you don't need to be detailing stuff from back then. But the brutal edit is really bringing it back down to a maximum of 2 pages. Very often it's one page. We were doing a job where one of my clients was applying to McKinsey, and we were working with someone at McKinsey, which is a great thing. So rather than just applying and sending it on the easy apply through LinkedIn or something like that, don't just send it. You always want to have someone waiting for your resume at the other end. So you want to be, yes, you post your resume effectively through that letterbox or put it into the inbox, but make sure you've gone around the back door and you've had a word with someone so that they're excited about it arriving. That's my biggest tip for you, because, you know, I told you about the guy he was 87th in the line with these applications. Gosh, he needs to be in there shaking someone's hand and saying, look, can you have a look for my resume? It's just arrived, because I'm a great candidate for this. And if he hasn't done that networking, then, you know, he's one of 87. That's really bad odds, even if you're a great candidate. So this brutal edit, this is the resume upgrade number 4. And what we do there is we really go through and we make sure we cut out all of what's not necessary. And we cut it back, because less is more when it comes to resumes. The temptation is to try to explain and tell everything you've done. Don't do that. Much better to tease and to tempt someone, give them a hook about what you've done for somebody else and explain how you can do that for them as well. And by getting these marketing hooks in, think of this as a marketing document, not just a complete factual list of everything you've ever done. Yes, it should be factual. Yes, it should be the truth, but make sure it's full of little hooks so that people can get excited about what you can do for them based on the great things you've done for people in the past. And that's what the brutal edit is. You've cut out all the stuff that's all of the – people don't want to know about everything you did, all your duties and responsibilities. Gosh, you'll send them to sleep, you know. What you need to do is talk about what you've achieved and the difference you've made for a company. That's the stuff that should survive the edit. That's what it should come down to.
You know, Sam, I'm getting the idea that in order to become the obvious candidate, you almost have to treat your resume not only as a marketing document like you're talking about, but for those people who don't have a marketing background, maybe start thinking of it as a personal ad or a Match.com type of profile, right? You want to put your best foot forward, and you don't need to bore people with massive amounts of detail. But like you said, job duties, you know. How many people are going to really, you know, dig into job duties?
You're so right. And essential upgrade number six, indulge me here, because it's exactly what you just touched on. I call it talk about your best bits, sell in your best bits. And you know how when you have a reality TV show and the person is about to get evicted from the house or they're about to get sent off the show, what they do, of course, is they show the best bits of that particular person while they've been on the show.
Right.
And you'll have like a one-minute show reel that shows what they've been doing all the time they've been on the whole series. And that's what you need to do. That's your resume. Show the highlights. Show your best bits at the end of your experience on the reality show, because that's the bit people will remember. That's the bit they want to see. And what you must do, do you remember in the old direct response language, we used to talk about above the fold, and what we meant there was before you folded a direct mail letter, you had to get your main benefits onto the bit above the fold. It's like where the headline sits on the New York Times, on that bit above the fold. Because people don't necessarily turn it over on a newsstand. The New York Times, you see the headline, but you don't see the bottom half of page one. And it's the same for a resume. You've got to make sure, don't save the good stuff till the last bit. It's not like a book where you want to make that last sizzling chapter, you know, of your bestseller. No. Make sure, this is like a press release. You've got to put the very best stuff into the headline and into the first half page. Because if you've not sold someone, here's the fact for you. People will only read that resume for between 9 and 15 seconds before they've made up their mind. And like you said about the photo, people make their decisions on people and their photo so quickly, but it's just the same for a resume. What they're scanning for, the keywords, they want to know big brands, they want to know big companies that they can trust, they want to know different universities, different experience. And if you're not grabbing the things, the keywords that are relevant for that job, if it's not tailored in that way, if you've not grabbed them in between the first 9 and 15 seconds, they've gone, because what happens is they switch from the hope of saying, maybe this person's the right one, to, do you know what, I'm not seeing what I need here. Can I get rid of this? Yeah, it's gone. And it's only if by the end of the 15 seconds you've got them in the positive mindset that they're really still looking to go, yeah, this one, we'll keep this one in. Yeah, let's get Bert into interview. Otherwise, they're like, yeah, has Bert got it? Has he got it? No, he's going in the reject pile. And you can 15 seconds to get there. It's not brutal. Apologies, brutal.
It is. Well, look, you just said it a few minutes ago. You're talking about, you know, here's a person who has 86 applicants or maybe 186 applicants in front of them. You know, their mindset is,
I'm going to find at least one or three or four people that are pretty good fit for me. I don't have to spend a bunch of time. I don't have to, if somebody doesn't make it, you know, obvious, easy for me, I don't have to spend a whole bunch of time digging through, you know, four or five pages of a resume. You know, it's got to pop out. It's got to stand out. Let me ask you this. All right. So we have one, two, we skipped three. We went on to six and seven. So let's back up. Why don't we do three and then come back to five?
Sure. So we can. What we're looking for when we come to number three, what we're looking for here is we're looking for a section which is explaining your areas of expertise. Okay. So because what you're trying to do again is match this. It's one level down from the headline. The headline is that if you're going to say one thing only, make sure it matches what they're looking for in their job description, in the job advert. Then the areas of expertise, because you know when you read down that job description, they then say, oh, well, we have these essential requirements. These are what's required right. from our ideal candidate. And then they'll have some desirable sort of characteristics as well, potentially lower down the page. They're less important lower down the list. So what you're looking to do there is look at what they're looking for, and you want to be able to discuss your experience in terms of the words that they're looking for. Because if this is happening electronically, what you need to be able to do is make sure you've got those keywords in place, because that scanner is brutal. It's stupid as well. It can only, if it's looking for leadership and you say team leader, it doesn't even notice. So you better use the right language. And sometimes it's, if they're looking for leadership, you want to use both of those kind of words. You want to say leader, leadership, led a team, all that kind of thing, because it's looking for those words. So you need to be very smart in terms of the way you are using words within the document. But you might include then, what I say is, you know, if people have got just literally this reverse chronology of all of their jobs going back into the past and then where they went to school, that's no good, because you're making the reader do the work. And you can't, you've not got time in 9 to 15 seconds for someone to actually find out what they need to find from your resume. You've got to make it easy for them. So I suggest adding this bit is above the fold. So on page one, we'll start with a little profile that will explain what you do. Then the very next section is then the areas of expertise. And what you do is you subhead in bold. This is all explained in the book, of course, but you subhead in bold so that someone who is just skimming through in this 9 to 15 seconds, they can see team leader, they can see stakeholder management, they can see business development, they can see international sales, whatever it might be that this particular job requires. You make sure that you've gone through and you start your areas of expertise with the language that they're looking for. You're not making this up. You need to have the truth here. But again, you're telling your story through their lens. That's what's really important.
You know what? And I want to repeat that. You're telling your story, but through their lens. You really want to make sure that you're getting it from that point of view. That's a huge distinction that people sometimes miss. You got to see it through their lens. Otherwise, they're not going to, what do you call it, really see what you're trying to, the story you're trying to paint. It's got to come through their filter. I like that so much. Number cinco, number five.
Yeah, so what we're looking at when it comes to number five is we're looking here for your achievements. And again, this is about pulling it out. Imagine if you look back through your entire career. If it's just all this history of jobs, you know, maybe some of them are big companies, maybe some of them are small companies. You can't expect someone to go and search through every single bit of work that you did to find something that's good. No way. What you need to do is pull out your most significant achievements. What are the big deals? And Bert, let's imagine if I was going into your interview for you, what four things would you tell me I must go and tell this interviewer on your behalf? That's what I'm talking about here. So out of your entire career, and you can always do this, you know, you can brainstorm 20 things you've done that are great. I know you do a lot of work with Arnie. I'm looking forward to meeting him with you one day, big hero of mine. You know, so you've got these amazing headline things, you know, the celebrities that you work with, the people that you interview on your show. But what would be the top four? And they are the things that we need to pull out. We put those onto your resume, and that's what makes the difference, because someone, again, they want to see these areas of expertise and how that matches into what they're looking for. But then lower down, rather than make them search all the way through your job history, the bottom of page one should actually then just be these three or four biggest achievements. What's the most impressive thing? And again, judge that. When I say what's most impressive, judge that through the lens of the hiring manager for this role. Because you might have done something else that was really impressive for a charity, but if you're going for a PPC role, you better make sure you're talking about what's relevant for a PPC company.
Right, right. I like that. I like that so very much. And again, if people want to go and download the crash course on the seven, upgrades, they can go to... free.obviouscandidate.com, and then it's the free job seeker's guide. It kind of walks you through all this stuff, but you know what, what's so important for those who are looking for a job is that these little things that we're talking about play a big part. I mean, I love this idea, number five, the top four things that you want that person to know about you. Yeah, you might have done 100, but what are the top four? The things that are going to really stand out. Number six, you know, putting forth your best bits. And then number seven, the never-nevers, never put a photo on there. Let me ask you this. What about a drop-by visit? What if I want to stand out and I drop by your office just to say hello? What's your take on that? Is that going to help? Is that going to hurt?
Well, quickest story. I was speaking with someone who was hiring. She'd had 20 applications for one role. And what she said was, do you know what? If one of those 20 had just picked up the phone or done something or invited themselves to come and meet my team, I'd know that they were the one that was the most keen. And she said, not one person did that. Now, not everyone wants it. And I think the idea of just knocking on someone's door, that's probably... I think you wouldn't normally do it for a sales call these days. I think the smart thing to do is to kind of phone ahead or email ahead and book a call. Say that you're really excited to meet the team. You're keen to know more about the job. You'd like to express, you know, and come and talk to the team even before your interview. And say that you're expecting to get an interview, but, you know, you're trying here to augment your application. You're almost inviting yourself for an ad hoc interview. I think it's a great idea to do that. Be proactive. Try and stand out. But it's not going to work in every company all of the time. So there's a judgment factor. I would imagine it's going to work better in a smaller business where you can't go and do that. I would suggest like Goldman Sachs or something, because you know they're not going to let you through security at the front of the building, and many big companies would be the same. They're just going to send you away at that point. But it might be possible to, for example, let's take it back a stage. What if that manager, the hiring manager, find out who is the person? Maybe they've been writing posts on LinkedIn. Follow what they've been doing. Maybe they've got a blog. Everyone loves the attention when they're bothered to write something. So become a follower and, you know, like what they've done, comment on what they've done, interact and engage and become known to them. And so that you're not a stranger when you come into that interview. So if you can't actually get there in person, maybe you're on the other side of the world these days. The job market is very often global. So find other ways that you can actually get there and express that you are a super interested and indeed an obvious candidate.
I love that. I love that so very much. And Sam, we'll end on that note. I want to thank you for stopping by today. I hope that if you are looking for a job, that you got a lot of value out of what Sam shared with us today. Lots of great nuggets. And you can go to free.obviouscandidate.com. You can download the Job Seeker's Guide and really prepare yourself to get the job faster than you ever thought possible. Sam Waterfall, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Brett. Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good stuff there from Sam Waterfall. He is the career coach at Obvious Candidate, and you can tell the guy just knows what he's doing.
I mean, this is just fantastic stuff. It will get you the job faster than you ever thought before. So free.obviouscandidate.com and get your free job seeker's guide. Don't hesitate. And go to obviouscandidate.com. You can get the book. You can see the other resources he's got there. It's just, what do you call it? It's fantastic stuff. Anyways, always, I'm excited and appreciative of you stopping by. I hope that you continue to support us, and we appreciate your job, your topic, your show topics, your guest topics. Let me rephrase that. We appreciate your topic suggestion and your guest suggestions very much. Looking forward to spending more time with you. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.